This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, this is Ads from the Hump Day crew, and here's another one of our podcasts. Enjoy.
Since Queer as Folk wrapped up 4 years ago, it seems she left our lives without a trace. There was no permanent record of her whereabouts, so we called the hotline 1-800-MISSING, and now she's somewhere we've lost and found.
She was quite the unseen, so where did she go? We were told she was cruising down Sunset Strip, going on another midnight run, chasing the seagull and helping a little cinder rabbit.
We sent out a solar flare, stripped down a VIP room, but the closer we came to finding her, the usual suspects would tell us that she was judging Amy, abducted on Friday the 13th, and recruited as a JAG.
Finally, the night man in Battery Park politely said, she left the country on a world poker tour to pursue a life with Roger.
So we thought by reading Comedy of Eros and Erotic that it would help us find her, but instead we needed to dive into the Pacific blue and check into ER just to recover.
We went to space above and beyond, but we can say that we have finally found her.
She is a Clooney, not from George's family, but half his age and just as good looking. We are, of course, talking about Michelle Clooney. So we wanted to talk to you, I guess, to start off with about Queer as Folk and your role as Melanie in that. Take us back to the beginning. What made you go for a role in Queer as Folk?
Oh, God. You know, I read the pilot script. My agent sent me the script, and I fell in love with it. I thought it was such an original script, and I got, I don't know, halfway through the script, and my character said, Melanie, this character said, I don't care what men think about their dicks. And I thought, oh, my God, I've never read a character like this in a script before. This is amazing. I love this. I have to do it. I'm the perfect person to play this role. And so I went for it. And I thought the script was funny, and it made me cry. And I loved the relationships between this group of friends. And I was just really excited about it. I loved it right from the beginning.
I know going into Queer as Folk, the entire series, there's a lot of apprehension from, you know, communities all around the world. But a personal friend of yours was like, oh, you can't do this because we'd rather live this life but not have it shown to people.
I remember there was one of my friends did say that it made him very nervous and that it's kind of like we were telling the community secrets. And I think that's one thing that the community, that's why some of the community had a problem with the show, is that it did kind of share their dirty little secrets and people reacted to it on a certain level. But I think it was good. I think it's good to, you know, shine a light in areas that just have been covered up for so long. And I don't know. I think it was very healthy. It was healthy to have these gay characters that were full, fleshed out characters who had their flaws and their weaknesses and their sexuality and their problems, and they didn't have to be perfect. And that's part of the liberation of the show. I think it liberated gay characters. And now when you look at characters on TV, gay characters, you see that they're not just the comedic relief or a lesbian, you know, dressing up in a short dress to turn on straight guys. They're more fleshed out and they're more real. So I think Queer as Folk was really important for that reason.
Did you have any concerns yourself being involved in the show?
I didn't. Oh, you know what? I didn't. But I come from a pretty liberal family, and I just I never thought for a second, oh, this is a gay character. Or I just thought, well, this is a woman who wants a career and wants a family and wants love, and that's something that I can completely relate to. So I never really thought, oh, I'm playing a gay character. I fell in love with her as a woman, and it didn't make a difference to me. In fact, I was actually excited. I was like, great, doing something fresh, doing something new. This is fantastic. So, you know, my agent at the time did say to me, however, she's like, are you sure you want to do this? And I said, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, you know, you don't know if it's going to typecast you, or you don't know what's going to happen. And I said, you know, I'd rather plunge into the unknown than sit around afraid to do something. And I don't know, I think it was revolutionary, so I'm glad I did it. I was really happy to be part of it.
I've been watching some footage of you, and I know you're a Scorpio as well, so...
Are you a Scorpio?
No, Ginny is a Scorpio.
I'm a Scorpio.
Though.
All we have to do now, Ginny, Michelle, is...
That's a Scorpio. Your Facebook picture is so hot.
Oh, thank you! Oh, my God.
You are a cutie. Ginny's a hottie.
I'm blushing now.
Oh, dear.
I'm kind of blushing, too.
Should I leave you two alone?
Flirting all over the oceans, I like it.
I wouldn't leave two Scorpios alone for a second.
She's got a point there.
Now, I don't know if Melanie had a star sign, but I would have believed she would have probably been a Scorpio as well. She just had that guts about her as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's so funny you said that, because I always thought she was. I was like, she's such a Scorpio.
One thing that's been a lot of feedback, I guess, from the lesbian community is that the women, the female characters, played second fiddle to the men.
I see what you mean. We didn't have as much screen time. I do understand that. But you have to realize that in the English version, these characters were very peripheral. I mean, they were hardly there. They're almost non-existent. So I think from the English version, we came a long way. And then, you know, I think that based on, you know, Tay and I got quite a fan base going, and I think that kind of nudged Showtime to greenlight the L Word. I mean, I don't want to take complete responsibility for it, but I think I just did. I'm sorry, that was very Melanie of me. Let me just take responsibility for bell bottoms. I think I invented bell bottoms. No, but I do think that I think that Tay and I did as much as we could with the screen time that we got in the storylines, and we fleshed the characters out, you know. But I understand what you mean. It was predominantly the boys, but we did come a long way from the English version, so I will say that.
Playing gay characters as straight actors, yourself and Taya, is it sort of thrown you into the lesbian icon category? And do you have to tell people, look, I'm playing a lesbian character, I'm not actually a lesbian?
You know, I kind of just let it lay there. I let people wonder, because, you know, look, I've had my experiences, and I am straight, but I'm heteroflexible.
Heteroflexible.
I'm a little Angelina Jolie, you might say. But so I just kind of let it hang there. And if people want to think I'm a lesbian, then I go, wow, I played my part well. And I also take it as a compliment. And, you know, I don't really, it's never really, you know, bothered me what people think of me, especially in that respect. I know when we were on Larry King, I mean, my God, he asked me like 20 times, are you gay or are you straight? And I kept thinking, oh, my God, Larry, who cares? Does it really matter? But I think back then, maybe now he may not say that as much, but I think back then it was just people were obsessed with who's gay and who's straight. And, you know, hopefully we'll get over that someday. Hopefully it won't really be such a big deal and we'll just introduce people as this is my partner.
It's interesting too, isn't it? Because on Larry King, you had a critic on who really had a go at the show, saying it was, you know, pornographic, pederastic, and pedophilic, I think, to a point. And
was he a Mormon? I think he was Mormon.
I think he was something of the right wing.
He was something of that right wing coalition that it's the last thing they have to hold on to. I mean, they're imploding. They're going down in like this sea of implosion, screaming about gay rights. It's all they can think of to do. So
when you were on Larry King, obviously it was in the middle of Queer as Folk. I noticed when I actually saw your picture when you left Queer as Folk, where you grew your hair out, and you know, you are quite the girly girl. I was actually quite shocked to see the dichotomy. They really bushed you up in Queer as Folk, didn't they?
They did.
Because I saw your Facebook photo and I was like, is that Melanie?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I had this, like, long, long hair when I booked Queer as Folk, and they asked me, they were like, would you chop all your hair off? And I was like, yeah, sure, I've done it before, I'll do it again. It'll grow back, and I did, and then they kept taking things away from me. They're like, okay, you're not going to wear any makeup, and I was like, well, come on, give me a little mascara or something, you know? And then they, like, put me in cargo pants. It's like they kept taking my props away. Yeah, you know, all my girly props. But also, it was, you know, I was a tomboy growing up, so it kind of felt, it also is a place that I feel comfortable in, so I didn't think much of it. And I do miss my short hair. I have to say, having long hair is a pain. So much work.
I thought you just might be having a competition with Hal Sparks on who can grow their hair fastest.
Oh, is he growing his hair? Yeah, I think I saw a picture of him. He looked like Gene Simmons or something. He had that real cool, it was cool, it was like this rock and roll do.
Now, over the 5 years of Queer as Folk, did you have any favorite moments, any favorite scenes that you just loved?
Wow, there were a lot of scenes. I have to say, I really loved the wedding scene that Melanie and Lindsay had. I loved that whole day of shooting because I knew it was kind of a bit of a historical moment, and just gay marriage and what's going on now, and I just, it felt powerful. That was a really great day, and I also remember the days that stand out. I mean, I have so many favorite days, but the days that really stand out are the days when we were freezing because it was so shockingly cold in Toronto. And so those days, I remember one time I had this tank top on with all these hot shots, these little packets you use for skiing, and I had like 20 or 30 of them surrounding my body. And when we walked inside, I took off my 9 layers of coats, and I got down to my tank top, and all these hot shots fell off my body, and Peter Page started laughing. And it was, we had a lot of weird, quirky things that went on behind the scenes that made for great inside jokes where we could look at each other and just burst out into laughter. And, you know, and then the naked scenes were always pretty interesting because you're naked, right? People that you end up partying with later on, and, you know, the crew becomes part of your family after 5 years, and it's always strange. I mean, there's no way around it. It's odd. Here you are, naked, doing a love scene, very intimate scene with people staring at you in, you know, the cameraman's 5 feet away, and it's just, it's always odd and, you know, nerve-wracking, and Tay and I always handled it beautifully, and we had each other, and we covered for each other, and, you know, we were just very good with each other, and I just saw her, actually, a couple days ago. I was in Vancouver visiting her and her husband, and it's just, I realized how much trust we had in each other, and we had that from day one, too. We had that from day one, and it never left us, so I just feel so fortunate that it was her, because it could have been really a hard situation, and we actually practiced kissing before we shot our first love scene, so, you know, to be able to do that with someone, to say, hey, come on over to my hotel room, and let's practice kissing each other, it's... I mean, how many people could you do that with?
That's absolutely right. I actually read, too, that you and Tay used to catch up outside of work over a bourbon and sing silly songs. Could you give us a demo of a song?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God. We didn't do that. I mean, we did that. That was like a steady diet for us. I mean, that's kind of what got us through, because the winters were really cold and the shooting days were long, and there's always something to complain about. You're not a proper actor unless you have something to complain about, right? So we'd get together and we would, we'd get hammered and we'd sing Bob Dylan and Janis Joplin at the top of our lungs. I had this big loft space and, you know, we'd invite people over and we would just, you know, let all of that excess of energy out. And I remember one year I brought up my rollerblades and a we would, like, bicycle around my loft and rollerblade. And, I mean, we had to, because there was... You have to understand, it was kind of odd being on the receiving end of all that emotion. You know, people would come up to us crying, and we'd receive these letters, and people would come visit the set. And what they would talk about were things like, you know, they now were in communication with their son, or, you know, son was now talking to his mom again after all these years, or people were coming out of the closet to their family, and kids in small towns across America, you know, were watching Queer as Folk and feeling like they weren't so alone anymore. And so I think that you know, looking back, I can kind of see where we were on the receiving end of quite a bit of emotion. And I think that, in a way, the reason why we would all get together and bond with each other and be silly is it was a way for us to release that emotion, and it was nice to have each other to go through that with. The group of people that I worked with, they were just amazing, and they truly became my family, and it's so nice to know that to this day we still hang out and, you know, have our little poker parties and go play ping pong over at Scott's house, and it's just nice to know that it wasn't just for those 5 years.
That's one of the interesting things we found. You're the fourth cast member we've spoken to now, and they all talk about how close you all were.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, it was just such an odd situation. It was such a unique situation to be in, to be on the first gay show for America. And actually the only gay show, aside from the L Word, it's been the only one that was a completely gay show, gay characters, gay storylines, gay content. And to be part of that, it was, it was extraordinary. And to go from being like a little theater actor to being like a television actress doing guest stars here and there to being on this show, to being in Time Magazine, to being, you know, in the Gay Pride Parade in New York and having people screaming. And I remember the first time we went to the Javits Center in New York after we shot the first season. And they were having this special weekend for us, and they were celebrating Queer as Folk. And we hadn't been back to the States since we'd been shooting in Toronto. So we go into the Javits Center to do this, you know, they told us we were going to do this autograph signing or something. We'd never done one before, so I didn't even know what an autograph signing really was. And so they walked us into the middle of the center, and there were all these screaming people. And I remember I looked over at this girl, and she had tears running down her face, and her hands were in the air, and she was screaming, Melanie. And I was like, oh my God, I think she's talking to me. Character. And I turned to Gail, and he turned to Tay, and then Tay turned to Hal. We're like, what the hell is going on? And we signed autographs, and people were pulling at our shirts. The security guards took us out back into the van. And I think they were all completely shocked because you could hear a pin drop. And I think we were just shocked. And from that moment on, we realized that people liked the show and that and it was a bit of a success and that we might be on the air for more than 8 months. And I remember after that, then, you know, the experiences just kept coming. You know, we'd do an autograph signing in Los Angeles, and there'd be like 1,500 people around the block, and we'd be trapped inside with them, you know, on the windows pounding. And I remember I had to go to the bathroom, so I went to the bathroom inside this closet, and then we snuck out the back. I mean, it was just craziness. It was like being a rock star for a bit. And to go through that with people and to be able to bond over it and to share the experience, and it's just very unique. And, you know, you can't really explain it to anybody because it's odd and unique and special. And I think that we were all kind of brought together because we're all kind of rebellious. And I think that that just added to the fun and excitement that we wanted to push the envelope. We wanted to see how far we could take the scenes. We wanted to see how far we could take everything.
You've obviously come a long way from Cinder Rabbit.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Did my mom put that someplace?
Well, we actually got a package of Crest toothpaste, so we don't know what's going on here.
Oh, that was how I got my SAG card. Crest toothpaste. I remember they made me take my... I had this really funky, like, necklace I got in Oregon where I grew up, and it had this, like, crescent-shaped moon thing on the end of it or something, or a cross or something, and they made me, like, take it off. They took the head off my necklace, but yeah, no, that was Crest toothpaste. That was fun. I love Crest.
After Careers Folk, you're playing Melanie for 5 years. Was it hard to shake her off? Because I heard somewhere in an interview that it took you a couple of years to shake her off because you actually had academic, intelligent people calling you Melanie.
Oh, yeah. No, really smart people calling me Melanie. And to this day, I was at the San Francisco GLAAD Awards and at the New York GLAAD Awards, and people would turn around and say Melanie, and they're smart people. I mean, people like you or I, or, you know, it just, they watched me play this character for 5 years, and I think for me it definitely took me a while to shake her off. I mean, she's a very strong personality, and it took me a good couple of years, and I feel like I've just kind of come through that, and I'm back to myself. So it's interesting signing up to play a role for 5 years. I didn't really think of the ramifications. I didn't realize, well, for 8 months out of the year, I would be in this character. I would be working with these emotions and this personality. So, yeah, it was challenging for sure.
Looking at your website, there is a massive list of charities that you support. Tell me a little bit about why you're inspired to do all this charity work.
Well, you know what? I just feel like if you can, you should. And people would call me up and ask me to put their charity on, and so I would. And, you know, I tried to focus on a few charities, and I was a spokesperson for a charity for several years. And then I kind of grew more into the political direction, because ever since the debacle, the Gore debacle, I decided I would campaign, you know, for the Democratic Party every election season. So it's that's taken up quite a bit of time. I campaigned for Hillary originally, and then Obama, and then I campaigned for Kerry back in 2004. And so that's been a big focus of mine. I'm trying to get people signed up with the ACLU, which I think is very, very important to secure our rights and to protect our rights. So, you know, I do what I can, and sometimes I do more and sometimes I do less, depending on time that's available. But I think it's important. I just think it's really important that everyone pitches in and does everything that they can do, especially right now with the world the way it is. I think that there's a lot of, I know in America, I should speak for for America, I know we have a lot of a lot of cleaning up to do, you might say. And so I think it's time for everyone to roll up their sleeves and to come together and to realize that we're all in it together, that we really need each other to pull through this time. And you see it happening. I think there's a definite attitude in America that we stand together, and that, you know, united we stand, divided we fall. And you definitely feel that attitude in America, and you haven't felt that for a while. You certainly didn't feel that under Bush's rule. You now do feel it. You feel there's more love, there's more understanding. People are supporting small businesses more and trying to reach out to others, make things possible. And I think we're going to pull through this, and it's really It's exciting. It's really an exciting time to be here.
And more importantly, do you think they selected the right first dog?
Oh, isn't he cute? Oh, my God. Well, I'm a dog lover. I'm actually here with my French bulldog over at my friend's house. I love dogs. I think the dog's great, but I love all dogs. I have a dog thing. I've always had a dog. So, yeah, no, he's adorable.
You're happy with how Obama's performing so far?
Oh, I think he's doing great. I think he has the weight of the world on his shoulders, and I think he's really showing himself to be quite a leader. I think the choices he makes, I can't imagine what it must be like to be him. But I think he's doing great, and I think his wife is doing really wonderful too. I think she's defining, you know, a new modern first lady role, and she's doing it with grace and ease and in her own way. So I think that's important too for women.
Obama has a partner named Michelle. I hear politicians with partners named Michelle go very, very far. Is that true, Michelle?
Are you speaking to my boyfriend?
Maybe.
Yeah, I love him so much.
You know, I've read some stuff about him. He seems to be quite the equal in you, because he seems quite philanthropic and a very big pusher on American civil liberties.
Amazing. No, he's amazing. He should run for president. He is truly the most amazing man I've ever met. And I think it took somebody like him to make me believe in partnership. And he's just great. He's one of the most progressive Democrats you will ever meet. He fights the good fight constantly. I mean, he works 15 hours a day. He's always on the phone, which I understand and I support, because I think it's great what he's doing. He helps a lot of people, and he fights for so many causes, and he really stands up and gets in there, and he says the things that are tough to hear, and he says them to his own party. You know, he's not afraid to really use his own unique voice, and I have so much respect and admiration for him, and I just think he's extraordinary.
And more importantly, what star sign is he?
He's a Capricorn.
Oh.
Which is actually the perfect mix for a Scorpio, because they're very grounding. They're exactly. Earthy, ground us wild Scorpios.
Yes, because we're a water sign. We're so flowy.
We're flowy. We flow. We have emotion. We flow. Sometimes we're steam. Sometimes we're boiling, and sometimes we're ice.
We're just passionate people.
We are just passionate. Well, that's what I always say. We're just passionate, and we're just alive, and we just need a good, nice, earthy Capricorn to bring us down to earth. He's great. He's great.
I heard you can tell a Scorpio by their eyes. Did you find the same thing?
I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I think I know when people always look at me and they tell me I'm a Scorpio. So I guess I look like a Scorpio. I don't know what Scorpios look like, because I've met a lot of different Scorpios. They come in all different sorts of shapes, sizes, colors. So I don't understand why people look at me and think I'm a definite Scorpio.
It's probably because you're wielding a weapon. That's what I find with Scorpios.
That's right. How do you know?
Oh, I've been at the blunt end of a few upset Scorpios.
I know. Men always say run.
Yeah.
Men say, oh, you're a Scorpio. I'm taking off. When's your birthday, Jenny?
My birthday's November 6th, and yours is the 7th.
God, yeah. Celebrate together.
We should, because our other host, the Bish, he's not here. He's actually in England. His birthday is the 5th.
Well, you could have a whole little party in Australia.
Exactly. It'd be great.
We could have gum leaf cake and...
We could get crazy. I could bring Eric.
Yes, you could bring Eric. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Apart from organizing your birthday this year, what other projects are you pursuing at the moment?
Actually, I'm writing a project, which we're going to shoot this summer, and I'm very excited about it. Film. Did Peter Page's film Leaving Barstow, which picked up 16 awards at the festival. So did the whole festival circuit.
Is there anything you still want to conquer?
That I want to conquer everything. What do you mean? I still want to conquer stage. I'd really like to do some stage. I was on stage this weekend for a fundraiser doing this Shakespearean sonnet, and it really made me want to do stage. It's just great to be in a theater. So I would love to do something in New York.
It's nothing like live, is there?
No, there's nothing like it. It's the most exciting place to be in the world when you're doing it. Nothing can compare. It's so exhilarating. It's film is always like you get your motor going and you feel like cut, you know, you're 30 seconds into it, and it's a lot of waiting around for that, you know, golden time when you get to act, whereas stage, it's more of an actor's medium and you get a longer run at it. You know, you get a good 10, 15 minute run of pretend 10 times.
Now, the interesting thing, Michelle, is about you. You're actually a professional ballet dancer, and you got a scholarship back when you were younger. And the funny thing is, are you going to actually pursue a career with something to do with that? Because the only time I saw you dancing on Careers Folk was in that clip with Christine Merck in Some Loving. You did a bit of salsa with Peter Page. That's the only thing I saw.
I think my ballet dancing years are behind me.
They're not coming back?
It's really hard. It's really hard. And I remember thinking when I was like 16, I remember thinking, God, there's got to be an easier way to make a living. No, I'm just joking. No, I love ballet dancing. But now, you know, I dance for myself. I go salsa dancing, and that's what I really love to do. And I do it for myself. And I would do it for a film if it called for it. But I don't think I'll ever be on point again, not in point shoes. It was excruciating. What ballet dancers go through, it's not normal. It's definitely not normal what they put their body through.
Now, does Eric salsa?
You know what's funny is we were just in San Francisco, and I took him to Top of the Mark, which is the jazz bar that has the views, 360 views of San Francisco, and we were dancing to the swing band. And we were talking about salsa dancing. He's like, oh, honey, I don't know how to salsa, so we're going to take some classes this summer.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait. Because our first date was at this great Dominican restaurant, Mama Juana's, he took me to. And he represents the Upper West Side in New York. And it's just got this great Dominican community and great salsa bar. So anyway, yeah, this summer we're going to be salsa dancing.
Was the food on the menu better?
I'll tell you, Mama Juana's on the Upper West Side, if you're ever in New York, it has this liqueur. I don't even know what's in it. It's like soaked in herbs, and you do shots of it, and it's a blast. This place is amazing. The food and everything. It's just a really great place to go, and not many people know about it except for the locals. So it's really special. It's a great place.
How did you and Eric meet?
You know, we met through a friend of mine who's a political activist, Alan Roscoff, and Alan. You know, I was talking about starting up this political party called Liberals with Balls, and this is this is towards the end of the Bush era, and I was very frustrated. And he's like, "Oh my God, you got to meet my friend Eric Schneiderman. He's a state senator on the Upper West Side of New York, and you guys would hit it off." And so I said, "Okay, yeah, sure." So we started emailing each other, and we emailed each other for a month before we met. And our emails were so sweet and so romantic, and then we met, and that was it. It was love at first sight. And,
wow.
You know, my mom always said, oh, you'll know when you know. And for so many years, I didn't know, and I was always, like, you know, unsure. And I think she was right. I think you do know when you know.
It's like fate, isn't it? Like, it happens when it happens, and it comes at the right time, too.
Oh, it definitely comes at the right time. It comes when you're ready for it. And I was never ready for it before, ever. Never. I mean, I had, like, pretend relationships, you know. I had relationships where I pretending to have a relationship.
They're always fun, isn't it, to kill time?
I was killing time. Yeah, I was killing time, and I was never really, truly invested like I am now. So I'm a late bloomer. What can I say?
Now, we like to play a game with all our guests. It's called 101 Questions, Michelle. Now, we're not going to ask you 101 questions, but we're going to let you choose the numbers between 1 and 101. So hit us with a number.
Oh, 69.
Why do all the Queerest Folk cast start with that one?
I knew everyone asked that one, so I thought, you know, I'll just ask what everyone else did. I'll do what everyone else did. I knew it.
Okay, Michelle, if you were a car, what color would you be?
You know what? I would be like a nice titanium.
Titanium?
Ooh.
Yeah. Like the American Express card?
Yeah.
And is that the color of your real car?
I think it is. I think it's actually titanium, yeah.
And what do you drive?
Yeah, I drive a BMW X5. I'm sorry it's not a hybrid. I've had it for like 6-7 years, so I'll be getting rid of it soon and getting a smart car.
Pick another number.
8.
What do you like to do naked?
Everything. I'm a nudist. No, I do. I love wandering around my place naked. I've always been like that ever since I was a little girl. Yeah, Peter Page got me a book of nudes. It's the most beautiful book you've ever seen, and it said to my favorite nudist.
Now pick one final number for us, Michelle.
54.
If you could pick a one word or phrase that best describes yourself, what would it be?
Just do it.
Hey, it's Ginny from the Hump Day Crew. If you haven't joined our Facebook group yet, while you're online, why don't you? Join the Hump Day Crew Facebook group. It's what all the cool kids are doing. We'll catch you next Wednesday.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities.
You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.